Good morning. This is the BBC World News for the 20th of February, 2026, read by Steve Hoff. We'll start today with a kind of a mix between the U.S. and Canada and the U.K. Headline, who's next? American lawmakers call for justice in the U.S. after Andrew in the U.K. was arrested. Members of Congress have urged the United States government to take action against associates of Jeffrey Epstein following the arrest in the U.K. of Andrew Mountbatten Windsor on suspicion of misconduct in public office. Quote, Prince Andrew was just arrested, end quote. Thomas Massey, a Republican congressman who co-sponsored the law that compelled the Justice Department to release the Epstein files, wrote on X. Now we need justice, all caps, in the United States. The king's brother, who was stripped of his titles last year due to his ties with Epstein, has consistently and strenuously denied any wrongdoing. Lawmakers have asked the former prince to come to the U.S. to testify about his ties to the late sex offender. Congressman Sulas Subramaniam, who is ranking Democrat on the House Oversight Committee, told the BBC that if the former prince did, quote, nothing wrong, then he should clear his name. There's a lot more we want from Andrew Mountbatten Windsor at this point, and our door is open, and we will talk to him on his terms, he said. I will fly out to the UK if I have to, whatever he wants to do. Calling the arrest a huge breakthrough, the congressman also said Mountbatten Windsor could not be legally compelled to come to the U.S. to testify. I think a lot of victims actually like seeing him lose his title, he said, a Democrat. The congressman, a Democrat from Virginia, said. He knew how involved he was with Epstein and Maxwell and saw that for decades now there has been a lack of accountability for rich and powerful people, end quote. The congressman also said, seeing an arrest result from lawmakers' investigations, along with years of victims speaking out, shows that some accountability is beginning to take hold. Along with Democratic Congressman Ro Khanna of California, Kentucky Congressman Massey co-sponsored the law that compelled the Justice Department to release the Epstein files last year. They said their actions are among the reasons for Mountbatten's Windsor's arrest. Even princes are not above the law, Khanna wrote on social media. Massey and I forced the release of an email showing former Prince Andrew allegedly shared state information with Epstein. On February 9th, I called on King Charles to investigate and answer questions. Republican Congresswoman Nancy Mace, a Republican, said she was the only member of Congress to publicly call for the arrest of the former prince. Quote, today, on his 66th birthday, that call was answered, she said. Who's next? We will not stop until every co-conspirator, every enabler, and every powerful figure who hid behind wealth and connections is held fully accountable. No one is above the law, end quote. President Donald Trump also weighed in on Mountbatten-Windsor's arrest. Talking to reporters on Air Force One on Thursday, Trump said, "I think it's a shame. I think it's very sad. I think it's so bad for the royal family. I think it's a very sad thing. It's really interesting because nobody used to talk about Epstein when he was alive. But now they speak." The specifics of the allegation of misconduct in public office against Mountbatten-Windsor remains unclear, but they do not relate to any sexual offenses. Police in the UK said they are assessing a complaint over an alleged sharing of confidential material by a former prince with Epstein. Mountbatten-Windsor is among a long list of high-profile names included in the Epstein files released by the Justice Department, including Elon Musk, Bill Gates, U.S. President Donald Trump, former U.S. President Bill Clinton, Richard Branson, Peter Mandelson, and Sarah Ferguson, among many others. Many people's whose names were included in the document have denied wrongdoing and are being named in the files does not imply criminal activity. But U.S. lawmakers said they are committed to continuing their investigation regardless. Quote, "No one connected to Jeffrey Epstein will escape accountability for their crimes," end quote. Democrats on the House Oversight Committee wrote on social media after Mountbatten-Windsor's arrest, "Our work is just beginning, and we will pursue justice for every individual who participated in the abuse of women and girls." Subramaniam, I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, and fellow congressman Robert Garcia previously requested Lord Mandelson, the former British ambassador to the U.S., to sit for a deposition regarding his relationship with Epstein. On Thursday, Garcia said that request had been denied because Lord Mandelson's lawyer said, quote, "He is unable to appear due to an ongoing investigation by the Metropolitan Police." And in a related article, New Mexico reopens criminal inquiry into Jeffrey Epstein's Zorro Ranch. The U.S. state of New Mexico will reopen a criminal probe into a ranch once owned by Jeffrey Epstein, following allegations that surfaced in Justice Department files on the convicted sex offender. State prosecutors said they would seek full access to unredacted Epstein files related to the Zorro Ranch, held by federal investigators in Washington, D.C. They also pledged to work with the so-called Epstein Truth Commission set up this week in New Mexico. The state shelved its initial investigation into the ranch in 2019 upon request from federal prosecutors in New York. Epstein, who died in a Manhattan jail in 2019, faced no charges in New Mexico. State Attorney General Raul Torres said on X that his office, quote, "will take a broad and comprehensive look at the Zorro Ranch." He said they would work with the Epstein Truth Commission set up by the state legislators on Tuesday. The bipartisan four-member panel is investigating allegations that the ranch might have facilitated sexual abuse and sexual trafficking. One of the state legislators on the panel, Andrea Romero of Santa Fe, told the BBC, quote, "We are learning that there may have been reports to the FBI back in 2019 or prior to of bodies being buried, of folks being trafficked." On Wednesday, the state said it was investigating a 2019 email from a recently released tranche of files that alleged Epstein had ordered the bodies of two foreign girls to be buried outside the ranch. This was reported by the Reuters news agency. U.S. Deputy Attorney General Todd Blanche said last week he is seeking an unredacted copy of the email, which came from an anonymous sender. Lawmakers on the commission also want to know why Epstein did not register as a sex offender after having pled guilty to soliciting prostitution from an underage girl in 2008. While Epstein did not face any charges in New Mexico, prosecutors in the southwestern U.S. state confirmed in 2019 that they had interviewed possible victims who visited the property. A number of women have previously alleged they were recruited and abused by the convicted pedophile at Zorro Ranch, which they said was integral to his sex trafficking operation. Congresswoman Teresa Fernandez of New Mexico told the BBC, quote, "In Zorro Ranch, it was very isolated and a very beautiful landscape. We have heard very disturbing reports of some of the activity going on there," end quote. She added, "We know that there were horrible things that occurred at the ranch." There are thousands of references to the ranch located south of Santa Fe in the millions of documents released in late January by the U.S. Justice Department. It boasts a 21,000-square-foot mansion on a hilltop overlooking nearly 10,000 acres of desert. Nearby was a private airstrip and helipad. Epstein bought the property in 1993 from former New Mexico Governor Bruce King. According to Reuters, he leased around 1,250 acres of state lands around the ranch at the same time. But the New Mexico State Land Commission canceled the leases in September of 2019 after the office determined that Epstein had used the track as a private buffer, not for ranching or agriculture. Zorro Ranch, is now owned by former Texas State Senator Don Huffines, who purchased the property from the Epstein estate in 2023. He pledged proceeds from the sale to the late sex traffickers' victims. And the news from over in Italy, where the Olympics is going on, U.S. clinch ice hockey gold with overtime winner. Megan Keller scored in overtime to clinch the Winter Olympic gold for the United States in a dramatic 2-1 win over rivals Canada. It marks the third Olympic gold for the U.S. women's team and their first since the 2018 games in Pyeongchang. Kristen O'Neill had given the Canadians the lead in the second period at Milan's ice hockey arena, ending the U.S.'s and 52-minute streak without conceding a goal since their opening win over Czech Republic. With little more than 2 minutes left on the clock, U.S. captain Hillary Knight scored her 15th career goal, Olympic goal, on her final appearance to force a Southern Death overtime. The third time the women's Olympic final has required it in four games. 4 minutes into the 3-on-3 period, Keller skillfully drew her opponent out of position before firing past Canadian goaltender Anne-Renée Desbien, sparking wild celebrations as her teammates poured onto the ice. Barring the 2006 games in Turin, when Canada defeated Sweden, the two North American nations have contested every Olympic final since women's hockey was added to the program in 1998. Canada are five-time champion, but had suffered a chastening 5-0 defeat by the Americans in the group stages, their worst defeat at the Olympics in 28 years. The U.S., meanwhile, have been in imperious form from the start, with O'Neill's goal only the second they had conceded all games. Earlier on Thursday, Switzerland beat Sweden 2-1 for the bronze medal. Next, Trump directs the U.S. government to prepare release of files on aliens and UFOs. U.S. President Donald Trump says he will direct U.S. agencies, including the Defense Department, to begin the process of identifying and releasing government files on aliens and extraterrestrial life. Trump made the declaration in a post on Truth Social after he accused Barack Obama earlier in the day of revealing classified information when the former president said, quote, aliens are real, on a podcast last week. He's not supposed to be doing that, Trump told reporters aboard Air Force One, adding, he made a big mistake. Asked if he also thinks aliens are real, Trump answered, quote, well, I don't know if they are real or not. The former president, Obama, told podcaster Brian Tyler Cohen that he thinks aliens are real in an interview released last Saturday. Quote, they're real, but I haven't seen them, and they're not being kept in Area 51, end quote, Obama said. There's no underground facility unless there is an enormous conspiracy and they hid it from the President of the United States. After the comment made headlines, Obama sought to clarify he thinks it is statistically likely life exists beyond Earth, given the vastness of the universe. In a follow-up post on Instagram, Obama, who served as U.S. president from 2009 to 2017, clarified, quote, I saw no evidence that during my presidency that extraterrestrials have made contact with us, really, exclamation mark, end quote. Obama's initial comments were made during a quick-fire lightning round of questions on the podcast. There was no indication that Obama relied on classified information when he gave the interview. The BBC has contacted Obama for comment. The Democrat and Trump, a Republican, are longstanding mutual political antagonists. For his part, Trump said on Thursday on Air Force One that while a lot of people believe in the existence of aliens, he has never talked about it and doesn't have an opinion on it. Then, a few hours later, he posted on Truth Social that... We'll start at the beginning of that paragraph. Then, a few hours later, he posted on Truth Social that, quote, based on the tremendous interest shown, he will seek the release of files related to aliens and extraterrestrial life, unidentified aerial phenomena, that's UAP, which used to be a UFO, and unidentified flying objects, UFOs, and any and all other information connected to these highly complex but extremely interesting and important matters. The U.S. has seen renewed public interest in UFOs and extraterrestrial life in recent years, sparked in 2017 by reports about a secret Pentagon program to probe testimony from pilots and other U.S. military members who have reported seeing strange objects in the sky. In 2022, Congress held its first hearings on UFOs in 50 years, and the Pentagon promised more transparency on the matter, setting up a dedicated office to collect reports of all military UFO encounters. The following year, the U.S. House of Representatives panel on the topic produced no major bombshells nor confirmation of alien life. In a 2024 report, the Pentagon said there was, quote, no evidence that the U.S. government had encountered alien life, that most UFO sightings were just ordinary objects. And now we move on to the UK properly. Headline, best ski season in years on Scotland's snowy hills. Scotland's mountain snow sports centers say they are enjoying their best winter in 6 years. Glenshee has long been open since the end of December, and the resort said conditions in the last 3 weeks had been, quote, fantastic. Glencoe Mountain said it was proving to be the best season since the COVID pandemic hit in March of 2020, while Cairngorm Mountain describes it as a great year so far. Away from the slopes, heavy snow and high winds have increased the avalanche risk on some of Scotland's highest mountains. The Scottish Avalanche Information Service, the SAIS, has already recorded three times the number of avalanches it noted for the whole season last year, with almost 100 of them in the last month. There has also been a spotlight on avalanches in the U.S. and parts of Europe in recent weeks, with the Alps seeing more fatalities than usual this season. Next, higher tax helped UK government reach record January surplus. A surge in capital gains tax, employers' national insurance contributions, and a boost in income tax receipts helped buoy the government's finances last month. An uptick in tax receipts, which far outstripped spending, created a 30.4 billion English pounds surplus in January. The Office of National Statistics said it was the highest surplus in any month since the records began in 1993. without adjusting for inflation, and nearly double last year's $15.4 billion figure. The boost is positive news for the government ahead of the spring statement in less than 2 weeks. But economists warned the public financing remains finely balanced as growth in wages and the broader economy remain slow. The government usually collects more tax than it spends in January compared with other months due to self-assessed tax payments arriving in that month. Analysts had expected the surplus to be 23.8 billion English pounds, so it's better than they expected. The ONS said money received from tax in January was 133.3 billion English pounds, which is 13.8% higher than the previous January. The big upswing in capital gains tax receipts was a major factor in the uptick in government revenue. And then there's this headline from just 6 minutes ago. KFC and Nando's and others ditch chicken welfare pledge. Major restaurant chains, including KFC, have ditched a commitment to improve chicken sourcing standards in the UK as poultry demand soars. Eight restaurant groups, which also include the owners of Burger King and Nando's, have left the Better Chicken Commitment, the BCC, in which they pledged to stop using fast-growing chickens for an industry-led plan without a commitment. Animal welfare groups say fast-growing Franken chickens mature quicker, but also have a higher rate of premature death and muscle disease. Trade body UK Hospitality said the industry-led plan will help restaurants firms reduce emissions and help surging demand for the lean protein while ensuring secure supply chains. UK Hospitality said businesses, quote, no longer believe the BCC is the right framework to drive the next phase of progress on welfare due to the requirement to source only slower growing breeds. It is argued that farming slower growing breeds produce more greenhouse gas emissions than farming faster growing breeds. The eight businesses owning or franchising 18 leading restaurant chains have instead joined the industry-led Sustainable Chicken Forum. Some of the brands include Popeyes, Wingstop, and Wagamama. UK Hospitality said the Sustainable Chicken Forum will focus on increasing welfare while limiting the environmental impact of chicken farming and keeping up with demand. However, animal welfare group Amana International said the change was, quote, about money and nothing else. Its UK chief executive, Connor Jackson, said the company's explanation for leaving is rubbish. Franken chickens pose the most serious animal welfare problem in the UK, Jackson said. He said that chicken farmers and poultry companies that produce more slower-growing, higher-welfare chickens, according to orders. This is why the supply isn't there for them now. Producers won't do it unless they have a contract in place because they are more expensive. Richard Griffin, head of the British Poultry Council, which represents poultry breeders and processors, said the news was most welcome, quote, end quote. He said that at a time of higher production costs and slow planning approvals, the industry did not need added costs. Although there has been a surge in the number of takeaway chicken shops in the UK in recent years, British supermarkets remain the major purchasers of poultry. Well, moving on to Africa. Tunisian MP jailed for 8 months over posts mocking their president. A Tunisian court has sentenced a lawmaker to 8 months in prison over social media posts mocking President Saïd following recent deadly floods. Ahmad Sadini was arrested earlier this month after he posted on social media about Saïd's visits to flood-hit areas, calling him the supreme commander of sanitation and rainwater drainage. He was jailed on Thursday on charges of insulting others via communications networks, a judicial official said. Sandini's lawyer told the AFP news agency that his client was being prosecuted under a telecommunications law against, quote, harming others via social media, an offense punishable by up to 2 years in prison. Human rights groups have criticized what they describe as an escalation of Saïd's crackdown on dissent since he suspended Tunisia's parliament in 2021 and began ruling by decree. Next, son of Robert Mugabe arrested in South Africa on suspicion of attempted murder. Police in South Africa have arrested the youngest son of Zimbabwe's late former president, Robert Mugabe, who is facing a charge of attempted murder after a reported shooting at a property in the upmarket suburb of Johannesburg. Bellarmine Mugabe, 28 years old, was taken into custody after a 23-year-old man, believed to be a gardener, was shot and injured. Police searching the house in Hyde Park, where Mugabe was staying, have found bullet cartridges but no firearm, police have said. Bellarmine Mugabe is the youngest son of Robert and his second wife, Grace Mugabe. Robert Mugabe, who died in 2019, led Zimbabwe for 37 years before being forced out of power at age 93 in 2017. One other man has been arrested alongside Mr. Mugabe. As investigators continue their work, police spokesman said, the pair are expected to appear in court, quote, soon, according to a police statement. Police are not yet officially naming Bellarmine Mugabe as one of those arrested, but reporters at the scene saw him in handcuffs, and he has been widely named by local media. The victim is in the hospital and in critical condition after being shot once, the spokesperson said. In a briefing outside the property, Nev Hu said the two suspects, I assume that's the police authority, said the two suspects have not, quote, told us where the gun is. They are not saying anything about the gun. And on to Asia. U.S. and Indonesia finalized deal to cut tariffs to 19%. President Donald Trump's administration and the Indonesian government say they have finalized an agreement to lower U.S. tariffs on the Southeast Asian country from 32%. Under the deal, Indonesia will cut trade barriers on more than 99% of U.S. imports and facilitate more than $30 billion of purchases of American goods. Washington said it granted tariff exemptions on some Indonesian goods, including certain clothing and textiles that are produced with cotton and man-made materials from the U.S. U.S. Trade Representative Jameson Greer said the agreement will break down trade barriers while advancing the interests of American people. The agreement came during a visit to Washington by Indonesia's President Subianto to attend the first meeting of the Trump-led Board of Peace to discuss the reconstruction of Gaza. Indonesia's Coordinating Minister for Economic Affairs said the finalized deal is beneficial to both sides and will attract greater investment in Indonesia. He said about 90% of Indonesia's requests on tariff terms were accepted by the United States. The vision of this agreement is mutual economic prosperity, strong supply chains, and respect for each other's country's sovereignty, he told reporters in Washington. He also said that part of the deal, Indonesia has secured tariff exemptions for more than 1,700 goods, including coffee, spices, chocolate, natural rubber, and notably its top export product, palm oil. It comes in exchange for Indonesia opening up its markets to American products, such as by accepting U.S. standards on car safety, emissions, medical devices, and pharmaceuticals. Indonesia will lift trade barriers on American imports, including agriculture, healthcare, seafood, technology, and car-related products. It has also committed to buy billions of dollars of U.S. goods, including cotton, soy, beef, Boeing jets, and energy. Indonesia will facilitate U.S. firms in developing the Southeast Asian country's rare earth infrastructure, which will help Washington expand its supply of critical minerals. The deal will take effect in 90 days, and changes could still be made to the terms if both countries agree. On Wednesday, Indonesia and U.S. companies signed a slew of deals worth $38.4 billion in partnerships in mining, technology, textiles, and other industries. Next, mystery donor gives Japanese city $3.6 million in gold bars to fix the water system. A Japanese city has received a hefty donation to help fix its aging water system. 21 kilograms, or 46 pounds, in gold bars. The gold bars, worth an estimated 560 million yen, which is equivalent to $3.6 million, were given last November by a donor who wished to remain anonymous. The Osaka mayor told a press conference on Thursday. Home to nearly 3 million people, Osaka is a commercial hub located in the Japan's Kansai region and the country's third largest city. But like many Japanese cities, Osaka's water and sewer pipes are aging, a growing cause for safety concern. Osaka recorded more than 90 cases of water pipe leaks under its roads in the 2024 fiscal year. Tackling aging water pipes requires a huge investment, so I have nothing but appreciation, the mayor told reporters on Thursday in response to a question about the huge gold donations. Yoko Yama, the mayor, said the amount was staggering and he was lost for words. The same mystery donor had previously given 500,000 yen in cash for municipal waterworks, he added. The city's waterworks bureau said in a statement on Thursday that it was grateful for the gold donation and would put it to good use, including tackling the deterioration of water pipes. More than 20% of Japan's water pipes have passed their legal service life of 40 years. Sinkholes have become increasingly common in Japanese cities, many of which have aging sewer pipeline infrastructure. Last year, a massive sinkhole in Satamama Prefecture swallowed a cab of a truck, killing its driver. The sinkhole was believed to have been caused by a ruptured sewer pipe. On to Europe. More than 90 deaths this season. Are we seeing more avalanches? It's not unusual for avalanches to be in the news in the Northern Hemisphere at this time of year, the height of the annual ski season. But Tuesday's deadly incident in California, which took the lives of 8 skiers and left one more unaccounted for, and the difficult situation in much of the Alps, where there have been more fatalities than usual this year, has put a spotlight on avalanches and how prepared winter sport enthusiasts should be for them. The two situations would seem to be very different. California has been coming out of the so-called snow drought, and experts do not consider the latest snowfall exceptional. But droughts followed by intense snow can cause problems. The new snow is unable to bind to the old snow underneath, which can either be very hard or non-existent, and therefore remains loose. Europe, however, has seen 2 major storms in the past week, and a large amount of heavy snow combined with strong winds, leading to high avalanche warnings levels across the unusually large part of the Alps. 3 Britons were among dozens killed in incidences over the season. One alpine resort suggested that the current conditions could be worse there than this century. Recent snows have also led to evacuations of several communities in Switzerland and northern Italy, as well as power outages and train derailments at Gopenstein in southwestern Swiss canton of Valais. But is there a connection between the events in Europe and California? Climate change might seem an obvious culprit for the unstable weather conditions that have brought them about. Quote, there is evidence that climate change will lead to sharper, more intense precipitation following by long periods without, Simon Mason, a senior scientist at SEIUS, told the BBC. This would seem to be the case in Europe, which has recently had several seasons with lower than average snowfall and some dry seasons in early part of this season. Though the recent spike in avalanche deaths in Europe is worrying, it's not exceptional, according to European avalanche warning services. 95 have died so far this season, compared to 70 for the whole of 2024-2025, and 87 in 2023, and the 2020 and 21 season when 131 died, and in 2017-18 when the figure was 147. Seems comparable. But if you ask weather watchers about the situation, a different picture emerges. Matteo France's team in France, near the Italian border, told the BBC the region went from below average snowfall to remarkable above average snowfall in just under 10 days. Meanwhile, at the Val di Isere resort, in its Thursday weather bulletin, said a third wave of 12 to 20 inches of snow after the two storms would have to be taken very seriously and require certain precautions. So, have modern avalanche warning systems and their safety measures taken by resorts in recent years kept the casualty figures low? Benjamin Zuffeld believes the situation could have been worse without these factors, and says he sees, quote, big effect, at least in Switzerland. He notes that, though, that France and Italy have both seen higher fatalities, 25 in each, compared to Switzerland's 13, but says this could be linked to even more challenging conditions in the western and southern Alps. The worst could be over, though. The weather is expected to improve from Friday, giving the resorts the space to carry out more safety work, following by the snowpack also settling. However, sunny, south-facing slopes will lose some of their snow, potentially leading to greater risks of off-pisters. I think that's avalanches. And on to Latin America or Central America. Venezuelan opposition politician released after amnesty law passed. Venezuelan's opposition politician Juan Pablo Guaipa has announced on social media that he has been freed after, quote, almost 9 months of unjust imprisonment, end quote. His comments come shortly after the country's interim president, Delcy Rodriguez, signed an amnesty bill approved by the National Assembly that could lead to the release of hundreds of political prisoners. Rodriguez's interim government has faced pressure from the U.S. to speed up the release of Venezuela's remaining political prisoners after delays to the law. However, Guaipa described the bill as a, quote, flawed document that excludes many Venezuelans who remain unjustly behind bars. Guaipa is the leader of Venezuela's center-right Justice First Party and was a former vice president of the National Assembly. He went into hiding after being accused of terrorism and treason for challenging Venezuela's disputed 2024 election result. and was tracked down by security forces and detained in May of 2025. Guanipa was initially released from prison earlier this month, but was then rearrested and placed under house arrest for allegedly breaching the terms of his release. He is now among hundreds of political prisoners that have been freed since U.S. forces seized Venezuela's, quote, President Nicolas Maduro in a raid on the 3rd of January. Venezuela's socialist government has always denied holding political prisoners, but first announced days after Maduro's capture on the 8th of January that a, quote, significant number of prisoners would be freed as a goodwill gesture. Opposition and human rights groups have said the government under Maduro for years used detentions of political prisoners to stamp out dissent and silence critics. Interim President Rodriguez has described the amnesty bill as being intended for the offering and receiving of forgiveness. Meanwhile, exiled opposition figurehead Elmando Gonzalez wrote on social media on Friday that there would be, quote, no lasting reconciliation without memory or responsibility in Venezuela. He added that a legitimate amnesty must come with truth, recognition, and reparations, end quote. Activists within the South American country have denounced delays to the amnesty law and a lack of transparency over who is being freed. Guanipa is a close ally of Venezuela's exiled opposition leader, Maria Cortina Machado, who won last year's Nobel Peace Prize. Machado has vowed to lead the country when the right time comes, after giving U.S. President Donald Trump her Nobel Peace Prize medal last month. She described her gift to Trump as a recognition of his commitment to Venezuela's freedom. And finally, what is dart frog toxin used to kill Alexei Navalny? Russian opposition leader Alexei Navalny was killed using a deadly toxin found in poison dart frogs in South America. The UK and some of its European allies have said traces of epibatinidine was found in samples from Navalny's body and highly likely resulted in his death in the Siberian penal colony 2 years ago. The allies said only the Russian state had the means, motive, and opportunity to deploy this lethal toxin. The Kremlin dismissed the finding as an information campaign, according to TASS news agency. So what is the toxin? Abatine is a natural neurotoxin isolated from the skin of the Ecuadorian poison dart frog, according to toxicology expert. It was 200 times more potent than morphine. Epibatinidine can be found naturally in dart frogs in the wilds of South America, as well as being manufactured in a library. Dart frogs in captivity do not produce this toxin, and it is not found naturally in Russia. The species known as Anthony's poison arrow frog and the phantasmal poison frog are among those that secrete the toxin into their skin. Although the chemical toxin has been investigated as a painkiller and for relief from painful inflammatory lung conditions, it is not used clinically because of its toxicity. The toxin is extremely rare and found in only one geographic region, and only in trace amounts. It is understood the dart frog referred to by the UK Foreign Office and others was Anthony's poison arrow frog, a species endemic to Ecuador and Peru. The frogs produce the chemical through eating the right foods to produce the alkaloids. The type of organic compound that makes the toxin and accumulate it in their skin. If the frog's diet changes, the toxin reserves will be depleted. Moscow has previously claimed Navalny died of natural causes, though Navalny's widow has consistently argued her husband was, quote, murdered by poisoning. The Russian embassy in London denied Moscow was involved in Navalny's death and described the announcement as feeble-mindedness of Western fabulists and narco-propaganda. The Kremlin spokesman, Maria Zakharova, was quoted by Russian state news agency TASS as saying all the talk and statements are the information campaign aimed at distracting attention from the West's pressing problems. At the time of his death, Navalny had been in jail for 3 years and had latterly been transferred to the Arctic penal colony. According to the Russian accounts, the 47-year-old took a short walk, said he felt unwell, then collapsed and never regained consciousness. Well, that's all we have time for today. We'll be back tomorrow, or maybe not tomorrow, but we'll be back Monday with more of the world news from the BBC. Have a great weekend.